From health and wellness to education,
we need to be thinking about what it takes for students to succeed.
From art and politics to social issues of the day,
we have young Black males who are thriving in their communities and who are being shown as leaders.
The journey is what matters.
I would say to all of us, we can be better than we are.
Let's join Dr. Wayne A.I. Frederick, president of Howard University, and his guests as they take steps on the journey.
Hello, I'm Dr. Wayne Frederick, and today joining me on the journey is Dr. Ivory Tolson. He is a professor in psychology here at the university, and he's also the deputy director of the White House Initiative on HBCUs. Welcome, Ivory.
Thank you.
We're going to talk today about the education of Black males. Our society has painted Black males as disposable. We have had lots of criticisms and commentary around the education system and how Black males in particular interact with that education system. Some of that commentary and critique has also led to some myths about Black male achievement, myths that your research has focused on. I want to pay attention specifically to the senior research analysis job you had for the Congressional Black Caucus, in which you published two studies in 2008 and 2011. Entitled Breaking Barriers, and I guess the follow-up was Breaking Barriers too. Why don't you tell us a little bit about those two studies?
Okay. Well, I started research on Black male achievement after there was a lot of articles that came out that painted a pretty bleak picture of how we were performing in society across a variety of different domains. But my interest in Black male spans a lot earlier than that. I did an internship, my pre-doctoral internship at the federal penitentiary, where I work with many Black men who are locked up, and I learned a lot about some of the federal policies, that was associated with the war on drugs, that led to a lot of Black males being incarcerated. So when I got into academia, I heard all of the noise surrounding the chances of Black males really functioning in the society. And there seemed to be a lot of rhetoric, but there wasn't a lot of solutions, not a lot of emphasis on what do we do to correct this issue. And there was a couple of things that I thought was wrong with the way that young Black males were being portrayed, and more specifically, how research was treating young Black males. The first thing I thought that was wrong was that there seemed to be this tendency to compare Black males to white males. And that seemed to be the central focus on the research, as if whatever white males were doing should be the aspirational goal for Black males. What I thought was seriously flawed about that methodology is that a lot of white males grew up in completely different circumstances as Black males. And so if you are a young Black male from an impoverished neighborhood, first in your family, first in your generation, to even aspire to go to college, your path to success is much different than someone growing up in the suburbs. But we know that there is a path because we see kids like that at Howard University every day. So that was the first thing that I thought was wrong. The second thing was I felt as though the Black males who were not doing well seemed to be driving the entire discussion. And so all of the conversation was about problems and deficits when we had young Black males who were beating the odds, who were thriving in their communities and who were being shown as leaders. So I wanted to do a study that helped people to understand that there were successful Black males, and that if we study them and use them as a benchmark as opposed to white males, we might actually find some solutions. So that was the theoretical or philosophical underpinnings of Breaking Barriers, and it led me to diving into a variety of different data sources and looking at different domains of their functioning to see what separated a young Black male who was succeeding versus a young Black male who was not succeeding.
So this started because of your involvement in a federal penitentiary. Mm-hmm. We hear this all the time. There are more Black males in our prison system than there are in our higher education institutions. Is that the case?
No, that's not the case. And I don't think it was ever the case. And so I wrote two articles that looked at that specific statistic because that seemed to be the most frequently cited statistic. But Right now, there are about 800,000 more black men in college than in prison. And that stat was originated by the Justice Policy Institute. But if you use their same metric, each year we see a rise in the number of black males in college and the number of black males and or the rate of black male incarceration has been pretty flat, even declining a little bit.
Okay. Now, coming back to your study, I had a bit of a tear-jerking moment earlier today. I attended my son's middle school prize day. And, you know, I sat there and out of his class, the top 10% receive academic awards, and he was one of them. And to my surprise, I didn't see him get dressed this morning, but he not only had on his suit, but he also decided to stick one of my pocket squares in his pocket, so he was looking quite dapper.
Yeah.
But as a means of looking at black male academic achievement, when you look at him, he's in a majority white institution. What are some of the things out of breaking barriers you think would help sustain my 10-year-old success?
Yeah, that's a good question. So breaking barriers looked at four different domains. One was personal emotional factor. So one to look at young black males who do well in school, how they feel about themselves, what are their health habits, what kind of diet do they have, what kind of peer relationships do they have, what kind of sleep habits do they have, different things like that. The second was family factor. So what was the composition of their household? What was their relationship with their parents? What kind of disciplinary measures did their parents use? And what was their parents' relationship to education? Second was social environmental factors. So what kind of extracurricular activities were they involved in? Did they have any involvement with the juvenile justice system? How did that affect how they were doing in school? Church involvement, athletic involvement, different things like that. And the final was school-related factors. So what types of school were they going to? Were they going to schools that had high discipline policies and zero tolerance policies? Did they feel safe at their school? What was their attitude towards school? And what were their relationship with their teachers? So those were a lot of different things that I looked at. And I was able to use a lot of different data sources to plot a path, you know, to help people see clearly. This is the profile of a young black male who's doing well in school. This is a profile of a black male who's not doing so well. So if we adjust our policies to be more consistent with the ones who are doing well, then we can do some amazing things for young black males.
And what would some of those things be in terms of the conclusions you were able to draw from that?
Yeah, well, I mean, with personal emotional factors, a lot of things related to the diets that they have in school was important. Being able to connect some of the social service resources to the schools and not look at their health in terms of ADHD and those types of things, but really just look at their health, happiness, and how they feel about themselves. Also looking at extracurricular activities and some of the supports in the school as far as for athletics and different things like that was very important. There's a lot of nuanced issues with families that I was able to get into, and there's a lot of articles that spawned from this. So I wrote a couple of articles about parents and their relationship with black males, because a lot of times we focus too much on discipline, but what my study showed was that it's that loving, caring relationship that really drive their success. And I also found that a lot of what we were saying about single parents was not really supported by data. It really depends on who your parents were. So if you have a single mother who has an associate's degree, typically that young black male is functioning better than someone who comes from a two-parent household and both of them dropped out of high school. And there's a lot of things I found as far as the schools are concerned. You know, as far as the way that we practice or that the way that we model the school environment, like with metal detectors, security officers, having the types of communication we're giving the teachers. A lot of things that I found in the study made it very clear to me why we're getting it wrong in schools today.
Okay, so the schools with the high security systems, the metal detectors, I would assume what you're saying is that that's an environment where those students didn't perform well academically.
They aren't thriving in those environments. And you know, these are environments that place a premium on discipline and not on learning.
You're listening to The Journey. My guest today is Dr. Ivory Tolson, Deputy Director of the White House Initiative on Historically Black Colleges and Universities, and a member of the faculty at Howard University. I'm Dr. Wayne Frederick. Now, when you look at graduation rates across the nation, it appears that D.C. has one of the lowest graduation rates for black males in the nation. What do you think are some of the root causes of that?
Okay. Looking at graduation rates is pretty confusing right now because the population of D.C. is very unsettled. So if you look at the Schott Foundation's report, which is what most people use, they show the graduation rate for black males in D.C. at 38%. Now, unfortunately, a lot of people take that to believe that there's another 62% that is that has dropped out. But it doesn't mean that. What it means is that there are a lot of schools in D.C. where the ninth grade class looks different 4 years later. And that difference comes from a variety of different reasons, including people leaving D.C. To go to the colonies because either they can't afford to live in D.C. anymore or they've been scared away from D.C. because of this data. That being said, when we look at the dropout rate, which I think is a little bit more accurate than the graduation rate, which is about 14% for black males, we do see that there's some serious challenges and concerns that we have to deal with. I think a lot of it has to do with misplaced priorities of the schools. We're in an environment where testing is driving a lot of the policies, and I think is distracting from a lot of things that make school meaningful for children. So if you put a young black male in an environment where teachers meet them where they are, where they're given time to interact with their teachers on a personal level as well as a school level, where the teachers aren't anxious about their performance on the test, but really invested in caring for them as a person, where they're given opportunities to participate in the school in ways other than just classroom, where their health is being taken care of, their mental health is being taken care of. And at the high school level, they're given opportunities to take higher level math and science courses. They're given opportunities to prepare for the ACT and the SAT at much earlier ages. There's a lot of things that make schools work.
Right. Well, the middle school on Howard's campus, clearly is one that has had and has drawn national attention. The first graduating class sent 95% of those students to college. As we make that transition from high school to college, what is the situation in our higher education stories around black males?
From high school to college?
That's right.
Well, nationwide, we're finding that a lot of young black males and black females are coming to college unprepared. And that primarily comes in the fact that, if you look at just high schools in general, only 50% have physics in the curriculum, and less than that have calculus. Now, when we look at predominantly black high schools, it's much less than that. So we're talking about a situation where a lot of our higher performing black kids are finishing all of their math and science classes by their sophomore and junior year. They may go an entire year without having any math or science before they get to college, which is not a good situation. So the Office of Civil Rights with the Department of Education is doing a lot of strategies to bring about awareness and setting forth some guidance on that. But there's a lot of things that we need to do in order to improve a college readiness for young black males.
Okay, so with that in mind, as we close, I just want to make sure that we touch on some myths.
Well, we talked about there being more black men in college than in prison. We also talked about the fact that black males from single-parent households don't necessarily do worse in school than those from two-parent households. We also talked about the graduation rates. A lot of people think nationally 50% of black boys are dropping out, when in fact that estimate is nearer to 8% nationally. So those are about four myths. There's an article that I wrote for The Root called The Nine Greatest Lies Told About Black Males. And so people can look up that and find nine different myths that I've debunked.
All right. Dr. Tolson, I want to thank you again. You can keep up the journey to making sure that you keep us on the right track and keep us well informed about black male achievement. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you.
My guest has been Dr. Ivory Tolson. I'm Dr. Wayne Frederick, and thanks for joining us on The Journey.
You've been listening to The Journey with Dr. Wayne A.I. Frederick, right here on the Howard University Radio Network.